Hi, I'm Tom Bell. I live in Cohasset, Massachusetts, which is right on the coast, just south of Boston. I grow my own apples in my backyard that are part of an old estate, and some of them are over 100 years old. I just won the Best of Show at Insider at the 23rd Annual Boston Brew Competition, and I'm ready to... what am I ready to do? I'm ready to pause and say, and you're listening to Cider Chat. and you're listening to Cider Chat. You're listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 128. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Wincoller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, our featured guest is Tom Bell, the winner of Best in Show for Cider at the Boston 23rd Annual Homebrew Competition. And you're going to find out soon how he made that cider and how he placed best overall against 37 beers. So stay tuned for that chat. And in the meanwhile, we're going to catch up with a little bit of news out and about in Ciderville. A photo of a big tree came across my Instagram feed via Little Pomona. You should definitely follow Little Pomona Cidery in the Herefordshire region of the UK. They were just on this podcast. That's Susanna and James Forbes making very delicious ciders. Lovely people. Well, this photo was of a very large oak tree, 450 years old. It was called the Gospel Tree. So you might want to take a look at it. It's a little bit of a write-up there. And looking at that photo just remind me of like how much I adore trees, all kinds, whatever variety. And there's a majesty, a feeling of majesty when you are in the presence of a large old tree. I mean, imagine 450 years old. There's big trees in New England where I am, some around that, I suspect. And they're just, you know, gnarly, bulbous kind of roots coming out of the bottom. You just feel the energy. That's the way I feel when I'm driving down the roads in Normandy, France. My head is like swiveling like a little bobblehead in a car, looking at some of the giant peri-pear trees as you are passing. I know makers, you know, talk about this. The pears trees that they're using are 300 years old, 400 years old. That's also true in the UK too. I know that you could get big trees there also. And it's worth seeing that. So I know I'm looking forward to that coming up on the cider tour, headed to Normandy, France, last week of September. I just sent out the first email to people, giving them some tidbits on some good language apps. I have some luggage tips. Just going to have a ton of fun teaching people how to pack their bottles of libation to bring home, because you know you got to do that. Perhaps you want to come along on the Totally Cider Tour. Just go to the ciderchat.com page for Totally Cider. You can see all the reservations there. Still time till May 31st to come along. That same note of coming along, well, you can come along right now to the Great Lakes International Cider and Perry Competition, which is happening this week, May 14th through the 19th in Grand Rapids. That is the yearly cider judging competition, and they coordinate it with Michigan Cider Week. So there's going to be a lot going on. There's folks coming in from the UK, all over the map, really. And we're talking about all this on the new secondary podcast called Cider Chat Live, which is a mini-me of Cider Chat. It's going to be totally different content and unscripted, meaning I'm recording right then and then publishing it up. If you want to find out more about it, go to anchor.fm. It's an app. Download that and you can subscribe. It's also available on iTunes and all the regular podcast directories. But Anchor is a good shot to do that because I'm able to actually call people right from that app and record right then. So this is something I'm testing out. If you have some thoughts, revelations, inspirations, do zap me a line, ria@ciderchat.com, or just come along on the Cider Chat live train out and about in Ciderville. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Let's see, this podcast is going live on Wednesday, so that means that right now, if you're listening the day this goes live, I'm actually on a cider tour in Michigan, all around Grand Rapids, and we're going to Rich Cider, which was on the podcast last week. That was episode 127. We're going to go to Vandermills. We just had Paul Vanderhyde on the podcast, and Paul is the president of the United States Association of Cider Makers. Oh, we're going to go to a whole bunch of them. You're going to just have to go to the podcast to find out more about it, but it's fun. Check it out, and more good news in Ciderville. Next up is our feature chat with the winner of the Best in Show for Cider at the 23rd Annual Boston Homebrew Competition put on each year by the Boston Warp Processors. We had the judging at the Sam Adams Design Center in Boston. And that was pretty neat because the building was empty. It's down by the water. If you're not familiar with Boston, what's interesting is Logan International Airport is in view of the city. I mean, it's very close. You're right in Boston Harbor, so that's neat. And the design center is kind of in that area, but not, but you could see it. And you're up high in this building, and it was kind of neat to be in the building when no one was there and have at our service all this lovely, tasty tidbits. So we didn't really get into that, but that just gives you a little flavor of the scene there. I spent all day judging on a beautiful May day, which was kind of hard for me to give up, but I had a lovely time doing the judging. Let's see, we had both myself, William Groda, who has won medals at Glen Cap. He's going to be on that trip with me heading out to Glen Cap. Charlie Ochowski, who was the founder of Valley Fermenters, one of the actual oldest homebrew club in the U.S. Notice that he called it Valley Fermenters, not brewers, because we ferment everything in that club. I'm a member. Charlie is also on the Cider Days committee, one of the founding members. And then Nicole Laban from Farnham Hill. So it was the four of us doing judging. And we also had Jacob from Down East Cider. He was judging with myself and Nicole for a while. But that was it for the cider judges. So it was really neat. If you want to listen to the full conversation around the Best in Show for Cider during this competition with the four of us mentioned, go to Cider Chat Live, because episode number one is that recording. And I think you might find it very informative. But now, for now, on this here program, it's all about Tom. So let's grab a glass and join this chat with Tom Bell, the winner of Best in Show for Cider at the 23rd Annual Homebrew Competition held in Boston.
Hi.
And congratulations on your win at the 23rd Annual Homebrew Competition put on by the Boston Warp Processors in the category for cider. How crazy is that?
That's I'm really thrilled. This is my first competition.
Your first? Is this the first cider? Did you put other ciders in that competition too?
No, I didn't. This is the first cider I've entered anywhere.
Oh my goodness. You know, I've heard about that, where people get this like first time award for the, you know, first entry. That's wow. That's amazing. Even more. Well, you picked the right one, obviously.
I seem to have.
So, Tom, let's just let Ciderville know where you are located. and your orchards?
I live, and my orchard is a backyard orchard, by the way. I live in Cohasset, Massachusetts. It's about 10 miles down the coast from Boston towards Plymouth or Cape Cod. And I'm about a third of a mile from Massachusetts Bay. So strong salt influence here, fog, terrible nor'easters. We take it in the teeth here. I'm at about 100 feet above sea level, fortunately. And my trees have been here for well over 100 years, some of them.
Wow. And do you know the varieties by chance?
When we first moved in, these trees were terribly overgrown. They'd been neglected for decades. This is an old estate that was built in about 1890, and from what I can see from the plans, there's still plans for the estate, the orchard must have been planted around the turn of the 20th century. When I first came here, I really didn't know what varieties they were. They weren't marked on anything. And so I started to take apples to, I took them to the horticultural garden in north of Worcester. I can't remember what the name of that is. And John, is it Brennan from Fedco was there giving a talk?
John Bunker from Fedco.
John Bunker, right.
Yep.
Right. And he took a look at them, and he identified one as a Baldwin, and another as a Northern Spy, and the third one still remains unidentified. And then I went to Cider Days probably the next year and took samples again and reconfirmed with other people that I had a Northern Spy and a Baldwin, but the third one, as I said, yet to be identified. So three of what must have been probably a dozen apple trees have survived for over 100 years here. There's still old stumps around and things, but they're long gone, and my trees were twice as high as they are now. So I spent 3 years gradually reducing them back down to their original scaffold canopy.
Wow.
And they didn't produce anything. When I first moved here, the first summer, there were no apples on any of the trees. And it took about 3 years before I started to get any fruit.
And was this just like you're a backyard orchardist? You don't do this at all professionally, right?
No.
You know, working with fruit trees?
No, I'm not a professional.
Yep. So
I rehabilitated a tree once before in State College, Pennsylvania. And that was also successful. It was one of these trees where the suckers across the top row of the scaffold had turned into branches, vertical branches or trunks that were the size of my arm.
Wow.
And gradually reduced its size and brought it into production again. So I had done it once before successfully, so I really wasn't hesitant to get in there with my chainsaw and start whacking away at the jungle on top of these things.
Great. How long have you been making cider?
I guess 2013 was the first year I did anything at all with cider.
Mm-hmm.
And I started with just jugs of organic apple juice from Whole Foods just to see if I could make it. And it worked well. And so the next year I started processing not just my apples, but I scout out all the apples within a mile radius of my house, and when I'd see apples on somebody's lawn, I'd walk up to the front door on a Saturday or a Sunday and say, hey, you've got kind of a mess on your lawn, you mind if I clean it up for you? And so I developed relationships with a lot of my neighbors around here, and they kind of expect me to come clean up the apples off their lawn. So I compete with the squirrels and the wasps and the deer and salvage as much as I can, and many of these varieties have no idea what I'm picking up. Some of them are clearly Gravensteins and Max, but there's a lot of interesting stuff out there too, including my favorite tree, which I've cloned now several times, but it's not into production yet. I found a winter banana in a parking lot, grocery store parking lot, and it produces a pretty nice crop every year, and really an amazing apple. I don't get enough yet for a single varietal, but I've been using it in my blends, and I'm really excited about that.
Wow! So you're a award-winning cider was in the category of New World Cider. And that is typically a rather quick ferment, or like that modern cider style that many commercial cideries are doing. But I'm having a sense that, you know, with the trees that you had and that you're, you know, doing this at home and just enjoying the whole experience, that perhaps the fermentation for this particular cider was a little bit, a little bit longer. So why don't we delve in there? How did you make this cider, and why did you call it a New World Cider?
Well, I think if we'd been using the rules or protocols or classes that Glencap uses, I would have certainly called it a heritage cider. And I just was a little uncertain where to place it. Again, this is my first competition and didn't really know exactly how to compete. I think I knew how to make cider, but competition is another thing. So, yeah, this. I don't know whether you noticed, but in my notes on my application for the competition, this cider was in process for over 400 days. In fact, 500 is closer to it. If you count the day I started picking apples and the day you guys judged it, it was about 500 days.
So did you pick the apples, I'm thinking Baldwin, Northern Spy, we're talking about late season. Let's just start there.
That's right.
Were you picking the apples, or were these picked up from the ground? What month was it, October?
Yeah, in October, about the middle of October, the Baldwin started coming in. And this is 100% Baldwin juice. There's no Spy in this.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. All right. So this was a single varietal cider.
That's correct.
Okay.
And so I started picking up drops probably in early October. It really got most of them the last 2 weeks. And then I separated the really good ones from the ones that are a little bit rough, and then sweated the good ones for about a month till they were not just you could depress them; they were starting to wrinkle, and then it lost a fairly substantial amount of water through evaporation or juice through evaporation. So they were pressed, and let me look at my notes here. Most of November they were sweating, and then they were pressed at the very beginning of December of 2016. And my procedure was to pulp them. I have a garbage disposal mounted in a sink outside, and I pulped the apples, and then added pectinase at the rate of about half a gram per 20 pounds. And macerated them for 24 hours, agitated them about every eight hours, and that was at about 40 degrees. So before I even pressed them, they'd already been macerated and turned into the consistency of, I would say, pretty fine applesauce. So the pressing was interesting. It was more of a gravity drain than a press. And I did press the residual, but about 80% drained overnight by gravity. The initial gravity was, since they'd been sweated so long, the initial gravity was about 1064.
Wow.
And I had about 5.5 gallons of my best Baldwins to start with. It didn't take very long for it to kick off. They started fermenting on the 10th or so of December in 2016. Temperature was in the low 40s and stayed that way in my garage by adjusting the garage doors up and down every night until spring, when it warmed up into the mid 60s.
Can I ask what kind of press you use? Do you have a basket press?
Yeah, right. It's a basket press.
All right.
A small one too. So it's a kind of a long process to do this.
Right.
So let me see. I did rack these every 10 point drop. to separate them from their leaves.
Mm-hmm.
So that was quite a few racks that happened, and everything was going just fine. I was really happy with the way things were looking, and everything had clarified by spring, and the gravity had dropped to about 10.02, and then disaster struck. It developed a heavy, heavy pectin gel in the bottom 20% of the carboy. It was 5 gallons I had, and I thought, oh, what am I going to do about this? And so into the literature and onto Cider Workshop and numerous discussions about this pectin issue, which led me to, I think it was Wes Cherry who suggested I look at Scott Lab Spectrum, which contained arabinase to take care of some of the so-called hairy side chains on the pectin to see if that would break it up. So I bought some of that and added, what was it, a 0.0264 milliliters per liter. And it didn't put a dent in the gel that had already precipitated to the bottom, but it turned it brilliantly clear, the part above it.
Mm.
So I lost probably a little over a gallon from my 5 gallons, which was heartbreaking because I was into it quite a long time by this time.
Yeah.
So I hated to see that gallon go, but there was really no way to really separate it from this gel. I did capture the first 3 gallons. I was very careful to get that brilliantly clear liquid above, and then captured the next gallon, which was a little bit cloudy, and used that, reblended that back into another cider. So I really was left with 3 gallons of this.
Wow. Wow, that's precious. I feel lucky I was able to drink some of it.
Well, you might be one of the last.
Wow.
So then once it had really clarified and I had it 3 gallons separated, I bottle conditioned it with that, added 12 grams per liter dextrose, put in EC1118,
mm-hmm.
and it hit 2.4 atmospheres after about 60 days. And I waited another 30 and then transferred it to some show bottles under 40 PSI pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys got to drink it.
And it was crystal clear, yeah. The bubbles in this cider were big, were really big. So when you say that you bottled it at 40 PSI, so you were doing this a very closed bottling setup. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah.
For the novice in all of us who don't quite understand what that means?
Well, when I decided to enter this, I was concerned that there was a lot of sediment on the bottom of mm-hmm. each bottle, and I knew from trying myself that there would only one glass was going to come out clear, and the rest of it was going to be progressively more cloudy, and I was concerned about that. So I transferred the a number of bottles to a 2.5 gallon corny keg, and then filled the bottles from the new show bottles from that by just putting in 40 PSI and pushing it to these show bottles. And I suspect that there probably was an effect of that CO2 because the bubbles were not nearly so big when it was just bottle conditioned. They were
okay.
Much finer. So that wasn't the most desirable thing to do, I guess. But in retrospect, I don't think I'd do that again.
Well, when I was judging it and I saw the large bubbles, I'm thinking, well, modern cider, that's what I'm going to expect to see. Kind of a, the cider's been through a bright tank, it's been forced carbonated, and it's being put in, which is essentially what you did. When you were moving it, and just so folks understand what Tom's talking about here in terms of a corny keg, that's like a 5 gallon, what's often seen to be holding like soda and a lot of at-home cider makers and brewers use these corny kegs, myself included, for cider and beer and whatnot. So when you were pushing that over from the corny keg into the bottle, was that a closed system, or you were just pushing it
directly in?
And then you just capped it straight away, and it held that level of carbonation. How long did you have it at 40 psi? That's the pressure.
I think probably 3 days, something like that.
And were you rolling the we call it the log or the corny keg around, or do you have one of those stones that go?
It was stationary in a refrigerator.
And that's it. And the refrigerator was at a any idea of the temperature there?
I guess it was probably around 36, 37 degrees.
36, okay. Yeah, because that's a big thing. People really, you know, probably are stretching their ear right now because folks really like that fizzy, you know, that those bubbles. And yours just, you know, it didn't take away much, except that I knew it was in bottle condition. We were in New World, so the bubbles didn't really take away anything from it in terms of the judging in that way. But that's good info for everyone to know. If you want to get some carbonated cider, put it at 40 PSI if you have a CO2 tank. And 3 days, what Tom did, and then just go directly into the bottle and cap straight away, right? You weren't letting it sit in that bottle. You'd pour it in and then cap it, right?
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
My preference is to, and virtually all of my ciders are bottle conditioned for about 60 to 90 days, and then I disgorge them. But this one, I didn't have, I only had 3 gallons, and I was worried I was going to lose a lot of it in the disgorgement process, and so I chose to bottle condition it in lighter weight bottles. So even if I'd wanted to, I probably couldn't, because ordinarily I'll run the pressure up to 60 PSI before I disgorge.
I see.
And these bottles might not have survived that. And I also learned the hard way that I was losing carbonation because I was using caps that were intended for beer bottles, and they don't seal champagne bottle well.
Uh-huh.
I've since solved that problem by buying special crown caps that are actually made for this. So,
right. You want to ask when you go to like the homebrew shop. Typically, they have two different kinds of crown caps, and the size that you had on there, I think it's like a number 28. Is that right for that size bottle?
It was a 29.
A 29. Sorry. Yeah, 29.
Yeah.
And then it and you want to make sure that it has like an oxygen barrier thing on the package if you're gonna. And really, I think you should do that with anything that you cap. I don't even know why anybody would buy anything otherwise than that for a crown cap.
Well, I found that even the ones that the homebrew stores think are appropriate for champagne bottles don't grip as well. They don't. The skirt is a little too short,
and
the beads on champagne bottles, which I use almost exclusively, the beads are a little larger than. And the bead is that bulge just below the lip. Those beads are a little larger than a lighter weight bottle, and therefore you need a slightly longer skirt to grip it sufficiently to maintain pressure. So, for example, most of what I was bottling before, after I bottled it, I could put on a pair of gloves and actually twist the crown cap, and I knew this was not good.
Yeah.
So I went to a great deal of effort to track down the real McCoy, and now use caps that I got from a place called Union Pack in Napa, California, who specialize in European caps. They're a little more expensive, but they really do grip that bottle tight. So it's important to do that, so you don't start losing pressure over time. And of course, that's an opportunity for oxidation as well. So
right. Ooh, their stock just went up. So that's called Union Pack in Napa
Union
Valley.
Union Pack, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but they're not the only dealers. There are a number of dealers, and if you look up one of my threads on in workshop that cider workshop, you'll see that there was a prolonged discussion about champagne cider that I kind of jumped in on, and people asked me, well, where do you get these caps? So I have I have a number of links there. You don't. Union Cap is not the only supplier.
Union Cap.
But I would just say that some wine suppliers and some homebrew stores aren't even aware that there's two different kinds of caps.
Mm.
So they're not always the most reliable source of information. When you start delving into this, you find that there really are two different kinds. And I even got the schematic for these. And when I got the caps, I even mic'd them. I have a micrometer, so I mic'd them to see, is it really true? And sure enough, it is.
I love it. Now, what blog are you talking about that we'd be able to see your talk?
It's Cider Workshop on, and it's called groups.google.com/forum. And then hashtag forum, and then cider-workshop. And this is a direct line to Claude Jolicoeur's opinions, and he weighs in on a lot of stuff. He's an extremely valuable source of information. In fact, I wouldn't be making cider if I hadn't digested his book about three times.
Uh-huh.
And also, Andrew Lee is always on this daily, I would say, and another extremely valuable source of really top-notch technical information.
So the main yeast, EC1118? Yep.
EC1118 was 1118. Just used for the bottle conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
The main yeast, the primary fermentation, was spontaneous fermentation. Whatever bugs were in there went to work.
Yeah, that's what's so crazy about the cider, because as terms of it being like essentially a wild ferment, I mean, talk about terroir at your location. You are a coastal, orchard-based home cider, you know, maker, and that speaks volumes for your location. You know, a lot of times people are thinking about orchards way inland and more of a farming area. But Cohasset was one of the first kind of like settled areas in the U.S. along the coast, being so close to Plymouth and Plymouth Plantation.
That's right.
So there's something going on there to really make that region. I know further south down in Buzzards Bay, people are making incredible wine, but you know, you don't normally think about that for apple trees. So this is kind of an eye opener, I think, in the way that people see apple orchards not necessarily being, I don't know, like in the backcountry roads up on the mountain hills of certain states. I think that's really good to know.
Well, we have a marine climate here, so we tend to have later springs but longer falls. So when those apples are ripening, we really do have fine weather here in September and October that it may start. I know from going to cider days that by that time the weather can be a little rough up there, but down here it's generally still pretty mild. The ocean would be somewhere in the high 60s still.
Mm-hmm.
That late in the year. So a very different ripening scenario than you would find, say, over in Franklin County.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what Tom's talking about, the Franklin County Cider Days that happens the first weekend of November every year. And this year it's going to be the 24th annual Franklin County Cider Days. Are we going to be seeing you walking about at that this year's?
I think you will, yeah. I'm going to enter probably one entry, and we'll see how it does.
That's the cider competition. Fantastic. And are you trying to make the same kind of replication of this particular New World?
Yes, actually, this is you judged the second version of this. The first version was done in 2015, and I've got that entered in Flint Cap, so it's even older. It's a year older than this one.
Ooh.
Been in the bottle considerably longer. Well, another year. And that in cider days, that's kind of like dog years, right? It's a long time.
Yeah.
For sure. And that one, we'll see how that does. But it was made essentially the same way. It has a greater edition of Northern Spy in it.
Hmm.
But it also was a failed Keith that I recovered.
Oh, wow.
Interestingly enough. So the process there was more like débourrage, where you let mm-hmm. the vegetable matter settle overnight when it's cold outside, when it's cold, and take off the clear juice the next morning and ferment that. So I'll be interested to see how that does. It did not have the same pectin problems.
Mm-hmm.
And probably because I tried to keeve it by adding, first it's the PME, I think it's called.
Right.
Methylesterate or something.
Yep.
Followed by calcium chloride. So mm-hmm. That probably took care of the pectin problem for me. It settled everything out.
Mm.
Captured all the pulp and all that, so I got a really nice clarification with that one. So we'll see how that goes. And I'm just getting ready to bottle. I have 15 gallons of pure, almost pure Baldwin. There's been a few small additions. Every time I rack, I've got to scrounge up some juice to add, usually to top them up. But mm-hmm. I've got 15 gallons, and I'm ready to blend those 5-gallon carboys together in the next day or two, and then bottle them. Half of 5 gallons is going to be put away to make real champagne cider, which means I'm going to lay them on their sides for a year and mm-hmm. disgorge them about this time next year.
Great.
The other 10 will be my normal method, which is I ferment them. Well, they're fermented. I bottle condition them upside down, so I don't have to riddle them much, and disgorge them in about 90 days, and then they can re-equilibrate over the next few months, and they'll be ready to drink and enter. And so there's a 15, a 16, and a 2017.
And the one that was the keeved, did you add any dextrose, or it had enough residual sugar within that keeved that you didn't have to choose to do that?
Oh no, I had to add.
Okay.
I had to add dextrose to that, because I think it finally stopped at again about 10.02 somewhere
mm-hmm.
in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. And you're working
so
with the same. Go ahead.
I took it up to 10.11, and. It went back to probably in the neighborhood of 10.01 or 10.02. So it's a semi-dry cider that had been quite popular, and I had a couple of bottles laying around. We really like to drink it, and I thought maybe I should enter this. It really is good. So we'll see what they say at Glint Cap.
Right, and are you using you use the same yeast there?
That was also, again, spontaneous fermentation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the EC1118.
Right.
Yeah,
for the
okay.
bottle conditioning.
Great, good.
That's a champagne yeast, and ordinarily it produces a really fine mousse instead of the coarse bubbles. So,
yeah.
Again, I really wouldn't want to be force carbonating. Again, that's sort of not what I want to see in my cider. I really like little bubbles, lots of them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, how exciting, as I will be at Glint Cap, and this is going to go live the week that I am going out to Glint Cap. It'll be a nail-biter, just kind of wondering, too. Of course, I won't know until after how it all goes, but best of luck with that entry. Everything that you're saying, I could, and having met you, I want to be transparent about that. I have met Tom Bell, just an incredible person, and the technical knowledge that you're sharing here, I know it's going to be really welcome to everybody who's listening out there.
Thanks.
Well, isn't that the bee's knees? A new world cider wins big time. Now, what we're finding at Glint Cap is they've split that category into modern new world and heritage new world. And I would definitely classify this cider that Tom made as a heritage new world. Well done, and we'll see what the results are at Glint Cap on his cider that he just placed for this year, 2018. There are photos at the show notes for this year, episode 128, with Tom, you could see the original carboy, the pectin haze on the bottom. Nice photo of all the carboys all laid out, how he did that very, very organized. Bins of apples, and also a photo of that Baldwin tree in its full glory with apple blossoms. Absolutely lovely. And the pièce de résistance of this entire story from Tom Bell is not only did he win Best in Show for Cider, but when they put in all the entries that won their top category, they had the final best overall of this competition. And Tom's cider placed third out of 37 beers for best overall. The first one went to Maurice for his Goose, which is a beer style. Matthew won second place for a German Pilsner. And it was Tom Bell who came in third place overall for this New World cider. That is good news to be dancing by. Go ahead, skip a little beat there. Go ahead and dance. This week, a new person joined the Cider Chat Patreon page, and that would be Jacob. So thank you so much, buddy. I really appreciate it. It always warms my heart knowing that people find value in this podcast and believe in it enough to say, yeah, I'd like to support it on a monthly basis. So thank you for that kickback. And if you are a commercial cidery, you could join too. There is a Cider Going Up campaign page. There's a list of a number of these cideries on there, including one business which is not a cider maker, but they do services for cider makers, and that is Process and Analytical NMR Services. It's a mouthful, and that's with John Edwards, a really nice fellow. There will be a chat coming up with him too. And of course, look forward to posting soon, very soon, a cider dinner with Carlos from Rambord Cider Company. A lot of good news out there in Ciderville, and we're still waiting for Current Cider down in Fishtown to make the announcement that the tap room is open. Shake a ray. And they've been putting out postings for people who want to work at the tap room that they are opening there in the Fishtown area, Philadelphia, to apply. So maybe they're filled up. I don't know, but you might want to get your resume in now in case an opening does happen. That is how quickly things flow in that way. So a lot of good news out there, a lot of things happening. It is May. It's absolutely lovely. So I hope you get out. It's peak flower season where I am right now. Not everywhere, but where I am. So I'm just kind of like a big old bumblebee going up to each flower and just sticking my nose up to it and saying, oh, I love this, huh? And I hope you love it out there too. This is Aria Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Going up.
Yeehaw!